battery that it's got to prove it's on by, well, it's got another 3 years roughly in order to do it. It's a very, very tricky thing. For various reasons, I don't think it'll be a handmaiden to a reform government, by the way, but that's a completely different issue. You don't win with 30%, 25 to 30% of the vote.
Right, our fun question is from Gordon in Hampstead. It remains unclear whether Brigitte Macron's hands on her husband's face at the weekend was just goofing around, as they claim. Well, not the French's for goofing around. When have the panel been forced to find an excuse for something embarrassing that they've been caught doing? Who would like to go first on that? Ollie?
It's probably, you know... Having told work that, you know, the boiler's gone and I've got to work from home and you know.
You're the boss, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but I still answer to some people, Ian, and which makes it worse, because then when you're on a Zoom call with them and it's very clear that, in fact, the heating in your home isn't broken because you're wearing a T-shirt and it's December, let's just say I got found out.
And that's the most embarrassing thing.
It's absolutely not the most embarrassing thing, but I've reserved quite a lot of it for not being broadcast on this radio station.
Okay, tell us afterwards. Emma.
I literally am going through a catalogue of inappropriate things that I can't share, and the carousel has yet to take me to anything that I can say in public. I think I'm just going to pass the buck to Lucy.
Well, that's two disgraceful people we've got on the panel tonight. Lucy Fraser.
This is such a tough question because...
Wheat sheaves running in the
place. Yeah, so, I mean, I regularly thought when I was a politician, you know, what would I answer to that question about the Theresa May hunter? And I could never actually think of anything that I could say, or was vaguely...
So you're not a politician now, so you can say anything.
Well, I suppose the other week I went to the theatre with my daughter and we were having quite a heated row about politeness and whether you should push, you know, rush in front of people on the elevator, on the escalator.
But she said you shouldn't.
She said I shouldn't, and yeah. I was ruining people's day. And we had a very, very heated row about this, and the lady in front of us, so we're obviously speaking very loudly, the lady on the front of us in the escalator said, "Do you know what, I agree with both of you."
Oh, I thought she'd say, "Didn't you used to be Lucy Fraser?"
No.
Used to be.
I still am.
David.
Okay, the scene is Neuschwanstein Castle in Bavaria.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, you will know that you have to go through some turnstiles in order to get in. I'm with my family. One of my daughters goes through, this is some years ago, she was much younger, and then a guy pushes in front of me, and I say, "You," under my breath, I thought, thinking also probably that he was German. A bloke turned round and said, "What did you say?" And in front of my kids, I said, "I didn't say anything." It was so pathetic. They still tell this story about me, how pathetic I was. Anyway,
all
very
my
embarrassing.
Was just gone.
I know.
Just with that one.
We gave you nothing good, Ian.
No, well, David gave you more than the rest, I think. But anyway, thank you very much indeed for coming in. Tomorrow on the panel, we have Labour MP Chris Curtis, Reform UK's London Assembly member Alex Wilson, the journalist Angela Epstein, and the chief executive of the campaign group Best for Britain, Naomi Smith. Coming up in the next hour, though, we're going to talk about apprenticeships, because the government is proposing more training for people aged 21 or under in England as it presses ahead with controversial plans to scrap funding for postgraduate apprenticeships. If you've undergone a career change, how did you find the process? Do you think that the removal of this funding for those older than 21 to do higher level apprenticeships will make it harder to change career? Or do you think, no, the government is right to put more resources in apprenticeships for younger people? 0345 6060 973. That's the number to call here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, it's believed a car which was driven into crowds in Liverpool last night followed an ambulance through a roadblock. A man in his 50s is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving and driving while unfit through drugs. 11 people remain in hospital in a stable condition after 65 were injured following Liverpool's Premier League title race. George Sefton has been a stadium announcer at Anfield for 5 decades and told LBC it was a dark end to a celebratory weekend.
such a wonderful day, celebration of what we've just done. So now I'm like nobody else, that I'm thinking that forevermore, when people talk about winning the Premier League in 2025, that's all people will remember, the disaster at the end of it.
A man who had taken at least 20 lines of cocaine has been jailed for 12 years after a three-year-old girl was killed in a crash in Manchester. Louisa Palmisanto was hit by a van in the city centre in February. Well, LBC's reporter Jess Reeves has the details.
The van had crashed into a tram, forcing it onto the pavement, veering into Lulu. She was taken to hospital with injuries but died a short time later. Rawal Rahman abandoned the van and fled the scene on Booth Street in a taxi, but he was arrested in a restaurant a few days later. The 36-year-old was sentenced to 12 years in prison for causing death by dangerous driving.
The King's warned Canadians face a critical moment in their history as he opened the country's parliament. His speech comes as Donald Trump imposes trade tariffs and threatens to make Canada the 51st US state. Four Just Stop Oil protesters have been jailed for planning to disrupt Manchester Airport. The group were arrested in August last year while equipped with heavy-duty bolt cutters, angle grinders, glue, sand and high-visibility vests. And the UK economy is forecast to grow this year more than previously thought. The International Monetary Fund upgraded its outlook, with GDP now expected to increase by 1.2%. But the IMF also warns that trade tensions linked to Donald Trump's global tariffs will impact growth next year. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 60 points at 87.78. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.19. LBC weather, rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night tonight. Showers lingering in central areas and a low of 2 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good evening. It's 6 minutes past nine on LBC. Now, all politicians reckon that apprenticeships are a good thing. Whether you're Conservative, Liberal Democrat, Reform UK, Labour, you're all united in your view that apprenticeships are a good thing. But where you divide is what you should do to encourage more people to take apprenticeships, because not everyone has the right mindset to want an academic university education. And yet we've somehow allowed a situation to develop in this country that if you don't go to university, you've kind of failed at the age of 18. Now, that we should never have allowed that kind of sentiment to be expressed, because it's completely wrong. Many apprenticeships can be equated to degrees, and employers need to value those apprenticeships. And over the years, I think the situation has started to change for the better. But I wonder whether this latest move by Labour is really going to improve the situation for people who decide to take an apprenticeship, maybe at an older age. I'm not talking necessarily about 50s or 60s, but I am talking about non-school leavers. Let me just explain what's happening. The government is promising more training for people aged 21 and under. This is in England, by the way, as it presses ahead with its controversial plans to scrap funding for postgraduate apprenticeships. Now, from January, only 16 to 21-year-olds will qualify for funding for Level 7 apprenticeships, the highest level considered equivalent to a master's degree, under these plans, which were confirmed today. This means many higher apprenticeships would have to be completely paid for by employers. Now, the Conservatives have previously described the proposals as a disaster which could undermine advanced NHS training. Now, apprenticeships in England are available for those aged 16 and over and combine practical training in a job with study. They take between 1 and 5 years to complete, depending on their level. A level 2 apprenticeship is considered the equivalent of a GCSE, while 6 and 7 are considered equivalent to a bachelor's or master's degree. Now, overall, the government is promising to create 120,000 more training opportunities for young adults and those who need to retrain. An increase in a charge paid by employers recruiting from outside the UK will be used to create 45,000 training places, building on existing programmes aimed at helping adults into work. Now, the big shift in this announcement is to pull funding from the highest level apprenticeships, equivalent to a postgraduate or master's degree. Now, these level 7 apprenticeships are used by people training in a wide variety of roles, including accountants, tax advisors and solicitors, most of whom are already in work. They're also a significant part of some NHS advanced training, such as for district nurses who want a more specialist qualification. Now, since an apprenticeship levy for large employers was introduced in 2017, there's been a boom in higher qualifications at degree or postgraduate level called Level 6 or 7. However, the numbers of young adults starting entry apprenticeships at Level 2 has fallen. So this announcement today is really an attempt to push more of the money generated by the levy paid to government towards those under the age of 21. Now, what do you make of that? Particularly if you are in the 16 to 21 age group, obviously you're going to think, well, that's a good thing if more resources are going into our age group. But apprenticeships are, I mean, people of all sorts of ages do apprenticeships, particularly if you change career for whatever reason. You may decide at the age of 30 or 40 that you want to do an apprenticeship. Well, now that's going to be made much more difficult because of a lack of government help. So if you've undergone a career change, how did you find the process? Do you think that the removal of this funding for those older than 21 to do higher level apprenticeships will make it harder to change career? And if you are in an existing apprenticeship and you're 16 to 21, give us a call and tell me how you found it. And maybe if you found the experience a really positive one, there'll be people listening who'd be really interested in your view. I mean, also, if you found it negative, I suppose. But I'm a huge fan of apprenticeships, and I think they really ought to have a much higher level of public support and approval than they do. What do you think? 0345 6060973. Stephen Evans is Chief Executive of the Learning and Work Institute. Stephen, very good evening. Now, I guess it does what it says on the tin, but what do you do at the Learning and Work Institute?
So we do lots of research into how you can help people back into work if they're unemployed, how you can help people to improve their skills, testing ways to increase the number of apprenticeships as well. So it's that sort of thing.
So what do you make of the changes that the government have announced today or confirmed today?
I mean, I think the government's right to want to try and grow the number of apprenticeships for young people. As you said, they're a really good way to boost your career, to learn while you're earning as well. But the number of apprenticeships for young people has gone down by more than a third since 2017. It wasn't that high by international standards anyway. So I think looking to prioritise within the budget is the right thing to do. One of the challenges is, as you were saying, some of this level 7 provision, so master's equivalent, is for senior leaders, and maybe firms should be paying for that themselves. Some of it's for career changers, and we need to help people to change their careers. And some of it, you need to make that link across to the NHS workforce plan. So there's a kind of headline there, and underneath it's a set of challenges. But I would say that focusing more on young people who've missed out far too much in that growth in the apprenticeship funding in the last number of years is the right thing to do.
You can put more funding into young people's apprenticeships, though. But why penalise the higher end of apprenticeships? Because it reads to me, and maybe I've totally misinterpreted this, but it reads to me as if it's almost penalising success. You're sort of levelling down rather than levelling up.
I think one of the challenges is the government's got a certain budget for apprenticeships from the levy, so £3 billion, as you were saying, in the year ahead. Actually, the Treasury is raising about £600 million more than it's spending on apprenticeships from the apprenticeship levy. So you could argue maybe if firms are paying the apprenticeship levy, all of the money should go on apprenticeships, and then we wouldn't really be having this conversation. But that's the decision the government's made. It's got a fixed budget, and within that, you've got to decide where to prioritise.
So they basically got, you're saying they've got an extra 600 million, which they're actually, it's called an apprenticeship levy, but it's not. It's a tax which goes into the pot of all taxation.
Yes, they're raising 600 million more from the apprenticeship levy than they're spending on apprenticeships in England or giving to the devolved administrations elsewhere in the UK. And that's grown over time. And that's a pot of money that could be spent on apprenticeships.
So if they said, Stephen, now you know more about apprenticeships than anyone in this country, we'd like you to spend that £600 million for us, what would you spend it on?
So I definitely prioritise increasing apprenticeships at entry level for young people. And you gave some of the stats earlier about how they've fallen. I think you have to think about incentives for employers. How do you make it easier for them? It is a financial investment that employers make here as well. But then you would be looking at some of those level six and level seven apprenticeships and saying, how can we widen access to them? Because one of the things you talked about is this is an alternative route into higher education for people. But we know from a research by the Sutton Trust that we have the same access issues for degree level apprenticeships that we have for higher education. So I'd be investing some more of that money in widening access to those who wouldn't otherwise take that university route.
But I'm not going to say that level six and seven have been abolished here, but it is going to be more difficult and more costly for people to take them. There are many people in the NHS who do these level six and level seven apprenticeships. What's going to happen to them in future?
I think this is a joined up government point, isn't it? So the Department for Education said, we've got a fixed budget. We want to prioritise young people, not some level sevens. It's only some level sevens here. There's about 20,000 people a year do level seven apprenticeships, and it's only those aged 21 and over who won't get the funding. I'm not sure that Wes Streeting has come forward and said what he's going to do to make sure the NHS has got the skills that it needs. So I think there is a joined up government point here. I wanted to pick up your point about career changes as well. This is really important. We have longer working lives. We've got the economy changing all the time. And we found the average career changer takes a £3,000 a year drop in their salary. And that's really difficult to do if you've got rent or mortgage to pay or families or whatever. And we don't give enough support to them through things like universal credit, through the skills system, through lots of other ways. So I'd like to see much more focus on those career changes if we had that 600 million back from the Treasury, for example.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed. That's Stephen Evans, Chief Executive of the Learning and Work Institute. Time for your calls in a moment. Lots of them coming in. 0345 6060 973. How challenging is it to change career? How did you find the process? Did you decide to take an apprenticeship for your new career? And do you think the removal of this funding for those older than 21 to do higher level apprenticeships will actually make it harder to change career? And frankly, I want to hear about your experience of apprenticeships more generally, because we don't talk about it enough. It's 17 minutes past nine.
This is LBC.
Okay, I want you to close your eyes and think of your car. Now I want you to imagine yourself selling that car and getting a really great price for it. You just got the best offer for your car, like 500,000 other customers. So sell your car today. It's not magic, it's Motorway. 84% of sellers got more than market price for their car. Validated against two independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
Thanks to their unique boutique spirit, there really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power.
Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
19 minutes past nine. We're talking about apprenticeships on the programme today, and particularly the changes in the rules that mean that level 6 and 7 apprenticeships are going to be more difficult to, well, really apply for or to pay for. And instead, a lot of the money is being shifted to the level 1 and level 2 apprenticeships for 16 to 21 year olds. A, do you think that's a good thing? Do you think it should just be, it shouldn't be either or, it should be both? And what about this fact that we just heard that £600 million from the apprenticeship levy is not being spent on apprenticeships? That is not joined up government, is it? Let's go to Laura, who's a new caller in Wisbeach. Hello, Laura.
Hello there. Hiya. Hi. I heard, I've just been listening on the radio and I wouldn't normally phone in, but I felt quite strongly about this. So I'm 44 and I'm currently doing an apprenticeship, level 5, in embalming. And if it wasn't for this opportunity, then I would have been really stuck, like a lot of people out there. I've got to the age of 44 and it's something that I went into an industry of and discovered that it was something that I was quite passionate about. And that's how I've gone into an apprenticeship scheme with it, which is very new for what I'm doing. But had I not had that, I would have been a lot more frustrated in life because there was a lot of courses I couldn't get onto, I couldn't do. So if the government scrapped that, I just think it's going to be really bad for maybe some of us more mature students.
Right. So many questions. First of all, what were you doing before?
So I worked, I had my children and I worked on an RAF base for a civilian company for about 11 years. And then I fell into the industry of funeral directing because I'm now married to a funeral director. So I came in and we worked together. And that's where it escalated from there. And I discovered that actually I like the back of house things. And because I'm quite inquisitive, that side of things. I also did years ago, I did some work experience at a mortuary. So I've been around that for some years. And then I decided actually this was the route that I wanted to take by watching other embalmers come in. And that's where it took off from there for me. But again, it wouldn't have been something that was maybe possibly a viable option without the apprenticeship scheme, purely because of the cost involved. It's also given me the opportunity of doing that because I struggled a lot at school, like a lot of people do. I was quite badly bullied at school. So I ended up going to a small education centre, which meant that when I come out, I hadn't got all the full GCSEs that other people did. I did go on to college, did a couple of courses, didn't find my niche in life. But the things that, like maths and English, I didn't have the full requirements, mainly maths. My English I did, but it meant that there's quite a lot of routes that were just blocked off for me, but the apprenticeship wasn't a problem. And then the government not long ago decided to scrap the English and maths for older students, which then meant I didn't have to do maths, which again has made it easier for me to carry on and achieve my goal of becoming a fully trained embalmer.
I don't know how to word this properly, but why would you want to be an embalmer?
Why would you not want to be an embalmer?
Oh, I could give you all sorts of reasons.
it's a wonderful thing to be able to do, to offer a family to see their loved ones looking at peace and the best they can possibly be. There's so many reasons for it. And unfortunately, people don't understand it, and you can't show people that. But when you see your loved one when they do pass away and then see them after they've had the treatment done on them, the peace that brings to families is something that I can't even explain how fulfilling that is.
I mean, we're going completely off the subject here, but I'm just interested in why you're doing this. What percentage of people want to see their loved one in the funeral parlour after you've done your work?
There's quite a few. I think the sad thing about it is there's many people that have seen their loved ones who, one, have not been embalmed because the funeral director hasn't explained or seen good embalming techniques. And then a lot of them will see and say, oh, I saw so-and-so, I saw my mum, but her mouth didn't look right. And that's purely down to they've either not been embalmed or they've only been prepped by somebody that's not had full training, or it's bad embalming. And it's people like me that want to stop that experience for people and offer the best experience for them.
I suppose it's different strokes for different folks, isn't it? I remember when, well, both of my parents died, I didn't want to see them in that state in the funeral parlour, whether they'd been embalmed or not. I just thought, no, I said goodbye to them, that's it. But my sisters did, and I mean, I'm not quibbling with them. That was entirely their decision to do it. But it is a fascinating subject on how people react in those circumstances, isn't it?
And it very much, when people view a loved one, it very much helps the grieving process, because it tells them that they have gone and it's final.
Hmm. I suppose, well, as I say, I think some people it does help, but to me, I wouldn't want the last time I saw a loved one would be in that state. I'd much rather the last time I saw them was within a short time of them dying.
It is, but when you've had a loved one that's died and not looked their best, or they've died in discomfort or pain or surrounded by tubes, If you don't see them any other way, that is a lasting memory that a lot of people have. So if, as an embalmer, and with decent, good embalming, you can try and eradicate that last view of a loved one for somebody and bring them comfort, knowing that with proper care, they didn't look like that when the last time you saw them, and they were given that respect to look as best as possible.
Well, look, you clearly love what you do, and it's a service that society needs. Just because I it sort of slightly creeps me out. And I'm sure you've heard it all. I mean, I've got texts in here from people saying, I mean, slightly bit trying to be funny, I think, saying, oh, it's a bit of a dead-end job, that, isn't it? Ha ha, Matt.
I've heard it all.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have. Gallows humour, eh? Laura, fantastic call. Thank you very much indeed. Well, I wasn't expecting an embalmer to be the first call. Forgive me for deviating off the subject of apprenticeships for a bit there, but I thought it'd be quite interesting, and it was. Katie is another new caller in Lambeth. Now, I'm imagining you're not an embalmer, Katie.
No.
What are you?
An accountant.
Right. So what? Now, why do an apprenticeship in accountancy rather than a different kind of qualification?
I think it offers great benefits, so such as a professional qualification and good experience.
And you've had help. You have an existing employer who's presumably helping fund this.
Yeah.
And in terms of what the government have announced today, will that have any effect?
So it shouldn't, as it's a level 7 apprenticeship. However, I do think going forward, it's something that should be funded, because it's really important that if you want to change careers, you're able to do this.
Because a level 7, that means, what, 5 years of doing the apprenticeship and studying alongside it?
So 3 years.
3 years. And yeah. How far are you into it?
A year and a half.
And so will your employer face having to pay more when the government removes funding in January?
So to my understanding, they won't. I think the amount that was paid is something that will stay. I think it's something that will be applied going forwards.
Okay. And what does... I mean, just give me an idea of what this involves. I mean, you were already working for the company, were you? And you decided to do this. How has it changed your job?
No, so I applied as an apprentice.
Right.
So it came as a package. And, yeah. So it hasn't... Yeah, it didn't change in any way at all.
So in terms of future applicants, I mean, if your company was recruiting again, do you think they're going to be less likely to recruit apprentices given the change in the funding levels?
I think they would still be happy to recruit apprentices. It's something that's necessary to be able to do the work that we do. So I think it's something that they will be more, they're likely to do. However, they will have to take into account, the costs.
Mm. Well, quite. Because there are so many other employment costs being put on employers at the moment that I just hope we don't get into a situation where cutting the number of apprenticeships for an employer is sort of the easiest option to cut costs. Katie, thank you very much indeed. We'll take more of your calls on apprenticeships in the next half an hour, but we'll also find out how the King has gone down in Canada. He was only there for 23 hours, but he made an important speech opening the Canadian Parliament today. Quite a controversial speech in many ways. Of course, it had been written for him by the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney. So we'll find out exactly what he said and what powers he has under the Constitution. But as I say, we'll come back to more of your calls on apprenticeships too. It's 9:31 on LBC. Daryl Jackson has the news headlines.
11 people are still in hospital after a car was driven into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade yesterday. It's believed the vehicle followed an ambulance through a roadblock to access Water Street, where dozens of people were injured. A van driver has been jailed for at least 12 years after running down a 3-year-old girl in Manchester in February, who then died from her injuries. A court heard Raoul Rehrman, who's 36 and from the city, had taken at least 20 lines of cocaine at the time. And the King's warned Canada is facing a critical moment, with the world a more dangerous place. Charles has opened the country's parliament in Ottawa at a time when Donald Trump threatened to make Canada part of the United States. LBC weather: rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night. Showers lingering in central areas and a low of 2 degrees.
This is LBC.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million indeed.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes, oh my God.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. So, start selling your car today. It's not magic, it's Motorway.
Ian Dale on LBC.
9:33 on LBC. Well, during his speech to Canada's Parliament, which, like the King's speech to our Parliament, is written by the Prime Minister, Mark Carney, and his team, His Majesty did appear to give a rebuke to Donald Trump's calls for Canada to become America's 51st state.
A confident Canada, which has welcomed new Canadians, including from some of the most tragic global conflict zones, can seize this opportunity by recognising that all Canadians can give themselves far more than any foreign power on any continent can ever take away, and that by staying true to Canadian values, Canada can build new alliances and a new economy that serves all Canadians. The Prime Minister and the President of the United States, for example, have begun defining a new economic and security relationship between Canada and the United States, rooted in mutual respect and founded on common interests, to deliver transformational benefits for both sovereign nations.
Gillian Francis Godolphin joins me, author of the new book On His Majesty's Service, How the King Preserves the British Constitution. Gillian, very good evening to you. Now, that must have been a very tricky speech for the King to deliver. What's the process when the Prime Minister of Canada sends him the first draft of the speech? Does the King have the constitutional power to say, well, actually, no, I don't want to say that, I want to say it like this? And is there lots of to-ing and fro-ing that goes on?
No, not really. I mean, the King is required to say the words of the government of the day, puts in his mouth, whether that's the British government, the Canadian government, or the Australian government. However, they can do things around the edges. They can personalise things around there. So we know that when the Queen, the late Queen, opened the Canadian Parliament back in 1977, she did add certain details in around the importance of Canadian federalism, as there were concerns then at that time of Quebec nationalism. And undoubtedly, the King will have done that today with the speech that he's done. He's certainly highlighted some of the personal moments in there. So, I mean, he's talked about how much Canada means to him personally and how many of the visits he's actually had to the country. So there's definitely a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, but the actual policy details that are in there are very much the views of the Canadian government.
I was reading today about some polling in Canada, which shows how popular the monarchy and indeed the King are compared to 5 or 10 years ago. And it's quite striking that this has changed. Now, I imagine that is almost entirely down to, how should we put it, the comments of Donald Trump over the past few months or so. Some Canadians, I think, would have liked the King to have gone further, but unless he made a speech separate from that speech in Parliament, he wouldn't have been able to. And even then, if he had made another speech in his visit, it would have really had to have been approved by the Canadian Prime Minister, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Anything the King says in public or private has to represent the views of his elected government in whichever realm that he is in. And so in this case, it would be Canada. I think the main thing that people have noticed is that the monarchy can sort of be boring. You don't think you need it. It's like a life preserver on the side of a swimming pool. It's sort of nice to look at, but you don't really think about it every day. But it becomes a real asset when you find moments of crisis or moments of challenge, in this case to Canadian sovereignty, where suddenly people realize that the monarchy becomes the national symbol, the unifier of the nation, the absolute and emblem of Canadian sovereignty. And that's essentially what the King was doing today, sitting there on the throne in the Canadian Senate, actually reading the speech of the government, his government in Canada, and saying, no, this is, I represent the Crown, which is a sovereign here in Canada, and Canada is an independent country.
Well, it is an independent country, but it still has essentially a foreign head of state, doesn't it? It is an anachronism that it has a British sovereign as its head of state in 2025, and yet there's never really been a Republican movement in Canada to the extent that there has in previous years been in Australia. Is there any explanation for that?
No, I think it's partly that is, I think, the way in which Canadians have always built their identity as opposite the United States. Right from the very beginning, Canadians have used the monarchy as a way of defining themselves against their larger southern neighbour. You also have a similar degree to Australia in defining itself in Asia as a country of European origin, but sitting in Asia, it sort of defines itself with the monarchy. But I think it's also important to note that although the King is obviously the King of the United Kingdom, he is here most of the time, when he sets foot on Canada, he is a Canadian citizen. He is the King of Canada. He is, if you like, home in his domestic realm within Canada. And that's sort of the interesting things. The King's nature is different in any of the Commonwealth realms that he visits. And so we can't just see him as a transplanted Brit in Canada. For all intents and purposes in law, he is Canada. He is a Canadian citizen when he's there.
The constitutional arrangements with Canada, with Australia, indeed in this country, how have they changed in the last 20 years? Not much, it seems to me.
No, they actually haven't changed much, because essentially the monarchy is domesticated in each of those countries. There is really no element in which the king operates in a capacity as the monarch of Great Britain, having some kind of oversight of those countries. He does absolutely operate as the constitutional head of state within those countries, whether it be Canada or Australia, and he represents that. I mean, when you saw the king today, he's actually wearing the Order of Canada, for instance, showing that he is actually the head of that particular order. He's not wearing any British awards other than the medals that he has earned through his military service.
Julian, thank you. That's Julian Francis Godolphin. His new book is called On His Majesty's Service, How the King Preserves the British Constitution. Right, let's go back to your calls and messages on apprenticeships. Becky says, I embarked on a 4-year Level 6 Chartered Manager apprenticeship, age 40. I completed it this January with lots of support from my employer and family and was awarded a first-class honours in management. I'm now enrolled for a Level 7 Senior Leaders apprenticeship from October. I can't wait. My motive was being underemployed for many years while raising children and dealing with health challenges also, and my career path is now finally opening. A real challenge, I fear, with the age restrictions on Level 6 and Level 7 to 21 is the need, certainly for Level 7 in my case, significant management experience of 5 years plus. How many young people will be in this position to embark on a Level 7? Good question, Becky in Malden. Keep your calls coming as well. Andy is a new caller in Cardiff. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Ian. Great to speak to you.
Hi.
Yeah, I had a bit of a journey myself. So I'm 44 now. And when I was 35, I decided to make a career change. And I wanted to become a carpenter. And it took me almost a year to persuade someone to take me on. Basically, because of the restrictions on funding for companies to take on older people.
So if you'd been 19 or 20, you think you'd have found it easier?
Oh, that definitely. It was 16 to 25 was the age group that got the funding. And so I was obviously 10 years older than that, and it was a real barrier. Mm. And then coincidentally, after that 1 year, all the legislation changed. And the age restriction was lifted, and there was no restriction. So the company then took me on, and 9 years later, I'm a fully qualified carpenter with my own business.
So it's all worked out exactly as you wanted it to in the end, but you found it difficult at the beginning.
Definitely, yeah. It's only through perseverance that this came around. And the fact that a company took the chance on taking on an older person, it was really strange, because you're in college with 16-year-olds and you're old enough to be their father, and you're actually the only one that actually wants to be there and listen and learn.
And what were you doing before?
I was a scientist.
Well, that's some change, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you really wanted to make the change and make a difference and put the effort in, then the opportunity is there. But I think this change is really going to put, obviously, it's going to affect a lot of people like it affected me. It's going to put the barriers back up again to people, because obviously when you're 16 or 18, you don't really know what you want to do for the rest of your life. And I figured that out when I was 35, so...
Because the thing is, that back in, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, so many people were effectively born into a job that if your dad was a miner, you became a miner. If your dad was a docker, you became a docker. It's not like that anymore, is it? And therefore, inevitably, people are going to make decisions about their future careers at the age of 16 or 18, And then by the age of, well, in your case, 35, you think, well, you know, this isn't what I want. I want to do something else. And these apprenticeships allow people to do that. But as you say, the worry is that if they are going to channel most of the funding to 16 to 21 year olds, that if you were now 35, you would find it very difficult to do what you wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it could be. It could potentially be a bigger, huge waste of money, because all these people that are going to be doing their apprenticeships, they might have the same mind change that I had, and then they think, "Oh, I don't want to do this. I want to do something else."
Yeah. And are you enjoying the carpentry?
I'm loving it. Yeah, it's. Yeah, my grandfather was a master carpenter, so. It might be in the blood or not, but it's really good. I'm in my local community. I'm making a difference to people's lives. I'm doing voluntary work at the local church and stuff. So yeah, it's really good.
And do you have a speciality? I mean, some people like making one thing, other people will like making another. Because I know a couple of carpenters, and certainly in the last 10 years. They have found that their income level has just shot up, because there aren't too many carpenters around anymore, are there?
No, I mean, the one word that, which basically storage, people just want storage. So whether that's wardrobes or cupboards or whatever it is, I know it might sound boring, but people just need it, especially young families when the babies come and they realise they got nowhere to put all this stuff, and I'm really enjoying it. Yeah.
Well, it's a shame you're so far away. Otherwise, I could use you. I'm always in need of more bookcases, much to my parents' disgust. But not that I've got any wall space to put them on anymore. That's another story. Andy, thank you very much indeed, and good luck with the carpentry. We'll come to more of your calls on apprenticeships in just a few moments. It's 9:46 on LBC.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Simon Marks.
Police in Liverpool take the unusual step of revealing that the suspect in Monday's car ramming is white. Do you think that's a smart move or a dangerous precedent?
Simon Marks on LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
The British Red Cross is here to welcome people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine.
We're here to help people to safety when storms hit.
We're here to show anyone struggling that someone cares.
Hiya, that's a huge help.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous.
High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
Ian Dale, text 84850. This is LBC.
9:48, Bruce says, apprenticeship is a real misnomer. Degree apprenticeships are amazing and give a great pathway without the debt. It needs a rebrand. For middle-aged folks, we think plumbers' mates, not MBAs. I think there is a lot in that. I really do. Let's go to Josh, who's a new caller in, I think every caller so far on this hour has been a new caller, in Bridgewater. Hello, Josh. You're very welcome. What would you like to say?
Hi, Josh. Hi, Ian, sorry. And, thank you very much. But the main thing that I wanted to point out was I went straight from school into an apprenticeship, and within 2 years found myself in a new apprenticeship, which was completely different to the first. So it was very much an admin apprenticeship at first, and then I moved into weirdly car sales. But the whole point that I wanted to make was you're being paid to learn. And I think that's quite important, is that apprenticeships really give you the opportunity to sort of expand your horizons in what you're going to be able to learn, but you're also being paid at the same time. And I mean, this happened 13 years ago, but nowadays it seems even more important to be able to do that.
And what do you do now?
So now I actually, I'm head of sales for a brewery somewhere local, but so it's massively worked, is that even though that small step that I took meant that I now, you know, I'm very much better than what I thought I would have been at 16-year-old, leaving school with no sort of idea of where you want to go.
So the experience that you got in that apprenticeship in the car sector, the car sales sector, you've been able to apply that to what you do now?
Well, I think you have to. I think you have to be adaptive in any sort of way that you work. And the previous caller was great in what he said. But I think you have to be adaptive. But the main thing, going into an apprenticeship rather than doing university for subjects that might not be in the long term the better thing to do, an apprenticeship gives you the opportunity to learn to be in a business in some way, shape or form. You're within a business. Mm. You're not in university doing something different that might not be the right way to look at it.
And how old are you now?
I'm 28.
Can you imagine that maybe in 10 or 15 years' time you think, well, I'd quite like to do something different now and retrain?
Potentially, yeah. And I think that's something that it needs to be looked at in that sense. But personally, I feel that at that point in your life, your career is, you know, you understand what you need to do. You have that mentality to be able to go and do something different. I think a lot of people that leave school or university or college nowadays, I think a lot of them have that mentality. I think it's actually about putting it to use.
And how is selling, I mean, presumably a brewery is selling beer. How has that changed over the last few years? Because we keep being told about like nightclubs going out of business, pubs closing. Is it a very challenging sector at the moment?
Oh, it's incredibly challenging. Probably just as much as the car industry, to be honest. I think you could flip a coin on which one is doing better or worse. But again, I think it comes back to that sort of ideology, really, of regardless of what you do, whether you own a brewery or you know, sell cars for a living or you bricklay or whatever it might be, I think the mentality of it's quite key and the business plan is quite important. But I mean, there's no doubts about it that the UK at the moment isn't in the greatest shape, but I think that's not really a good enough excuse to potentially not do something. More talking to the younger generation, more about what they can do when they leave school. It's having a foundation for them to become something else. If you become 35 and 40 and you want a career change, I personally think you're mature enough to do that yourself.
Josh, thank you very much indeed. Really interesting call there. Andrew says, Ian, did you do an MBA, which for the uninitiated is a Master's in Business Administration? The answer is no, because when I left university in July 1985, can you believe 40 years ago? I can't. Well, I vowed never to do another exam. And so far, I've kept to that vow. And I have started and run several businesses in my time. I never felt that I would have done it better had I done an MBA, I have to say. I don't think I would have enjoyed it, if I'm honest. Let's go to Anne in Leicester. Hello, Anne.
Hello, Ian.
I just wondered if you were aware of something called the Skills Boot Camps. Have you heard of them?
I haven't, but you're about to tell me about them.
I am. So I actually agree with everything people have been saying about apprenticeships, and I think it's a shame that they're going to reduce the funding. But you may not be aware that they spend £140 million, 25-26, on Skills Boot Camps. So Skills Boot Camps are aimed at people aged 19 to 65, and they cover some really interesting subjects. They cover things like construction, digital marketing, hence I'm involved with them, green skills, even HGV drivers, logistics, computer skills. And they tend to be something like 60 to 100 hours learning, which is typically one day a week for maybe 3 to 4 months. And the idea is at the end of it is that you actually get a job, or you apply it to your self-employed business, or you can be supported by your employer. So they're really interesting because they're focused on getting people into employment or improving their careers. And as a training provider, we actually have to recruit them, we have to train them, but then we also have to provide evidence that they've progressed in some form of career. So if the people are unemployed and they're a career switcher, because of course we get a lot of people that have come back to work, or quite a lot, or even people that are in their 50s or 60s that have been made redundant, we can help them get jobs, and other training providers around the country can help them get jobs. But also they might be putting a business plan together to improve their self-employed business. So it's very, very different. But if you didn't know about it, that probably means that a lot of other people don't know about it either. And for the learner, they're free. They don't get paid, of course, but they have to be committed to actually doing the studies. And if a business supports their staff, it's usually about £300 to £500. So it's just sort of 10%. So it's very, very amazing scheme that hardly anybody knows about.
But what's the point of a 65-year-old doing one?
Because you're only allowed to do one if you're 65, if you've got a self-employed business. If you were unemployed, a job seeker, you wouldn't. But you've got to remember that the age that retirement is going to be more like 70 in the next couple of years. So there's lots of people that are in their 50s. And once you get, there's a lot of age discrimination, and there's a lot of lack of technical skills in people over about 45. So there's a whole generation of people that aren't able to pick up things like coding or digital marketing, and therefore they become nearly unemployable. So in the same way that there's a lot of people that aren't employment at the younger end, there's also a big chunk of people aren't able to get employment later on in life. And actually these programs are incredible, and in the case of what we do, we actually have got one with a qualification associated it, which is a level 5, but they're basically level 3 to 6. So depending, you can choose where you go and get it done, and there's providers all around the country, and they tend to be through the local councils or the local mayor authorities. So a lot of time the funding is aimed at what they need in that area. So if you've got an area like in Leicester, where I'm from, there's sort of funding going into a lot of green skills, coding, new AI skills coming through, which is obviously what we'll be offering very soon. If you go to somewhere like Liverpool, you might find a completely different set of priorities. And training providers have to sort of tender for the money, and then they've got lots of KPIs to deliver.
Sounds a great initiative. So if you Google Skills Boot Camps, you can find out more. Thank you very much indeed. And let's quickly finish off with Dave, who's a new caller in Ealing. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
From the sounds of it, I did a course that that lady was just talking about. I did a skills boot camp, and it was great. I learned how to operate a tractor, and
I could have taught you that, Dave. Although they've got a bit bigger since I used to drive them.
I'd never done anything like it, and it was really fun and cool. I haven't used it since, but
is there a lot of call for tractors in Ealing?
As the lady explained to me, it's not just for farms, is it? They use it in construction.
True.
Yeah, so, but no, I mean, I've not been inundated with calls about tractor driving, which is a shame, because it's over. But yeah, I'm all for them. I think we should do, and I think we should do more apprenticeships in like real world stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing apprenticeships in like sales and management and marketing. That's me as an apprenticeship. You should be doing apprenticeships in like more real world stuff.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much indeed. Well, thanks for all of your calls and messages this evening. I'm back tomorrow from 7. If you missed any of this evening's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinion, choose which news categories matter most to you, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1 on LBC is Richard Spur, but right now, LBC's brand new apprentice, it's Simon Marks.
Thank you very much, Ian. Coming up at midnight, we're going to have the first news about a long-awaited report into the use of cannabis and the laws that govern it. We'll find out how far the report by the Independent London Drug Commission goes and whether you favour legalising cannabis in the UK. At 11, the King in Canada effectively slams Donald Trump for threatening Canadian sovereignty, while at exactly the same time, Lord Mandelson, the UK's ambassador to the USA, was praising the American president. What is the best way to handle America's leader? But this hour, the police decision today to identify the suspect in yesterday's Liverpool atrocity as a white 53-year-old man may have headed off civil unrest in the city, but did it also set a dangerous precedent?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a 53-year-old man is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after a car was driven into crowds in Liverpool. Police believe the vehicle followed an ambulance through a roadblock during Liverpool's Premier League title parade. Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims is